Okay, fine. So in, I'll take this off. Okay, in April and May of this year, so a lot of the schools and institutions were thrown off guard by a film on Netflix that made a lot of people very uncomfortable. It was called 13 Reasons Why. And the show, it was released in the end of March based on a best-selling novel for young adults for some reason. It was about a very complicated issue about depicting a teenager who hurt herself, and she experienced assault, cyberbullying, inadequate response from adults. She left messages, and it became very popular amongst high school kids because they thought it was very dramatic and it was very exciting, even though it showed violence in a very horrific and very extreme way. And a lot of the schools were caught off guard. A lot of emails were sent back between principals and teachers about what are we supposed to do about this show, how do we explain this to children, how do we explain the ramifications. And educators and parents and school counselors raised alarm that there's a show glamorizing all this dangerous behavior. So the National Association of School Psychologists released the following warning. We do not recommend that vulnerable youth, especially those who have any degree of suicidal ideation, watch the series. Its powerful storytelling may lead impressionable viewers to romanticize the choices made by the characters and or develop revenge fantasies. And this was a very big discussion about the appropriateness of the show. Should it be shown, viewer discretion, all these issues. And there was a lot of conversation about these issues and how it affects a person mentally and things like this. But one of the things that often gets pushed aside or not discussed is just the general idea of a person, and especially a child, watching violent things. And the effect that it has on a person's mind, and the effect that it has on a person's neshama, and how it changes a person, and how it is very difficult, as the title of the talk is, to unsee something. Sometimes we don't appreciate the power that when we look at something, and it enters into our mind and our eyes, that you cannot wash it away from your brain. You can't simply hope and think or daven it away that you're going to think that this gruesome image that you saw is going to leave and you're going to be able to get it out of your brain. So what we want to discuss for the few moments that we have is more than just, is are violent video games okay for teenagers? More than that discussion, what we want to discuss is the impact of watching violence and how we can become more sensitive and not less sensitive, and how we can impact the children and make better decisions for ourselves. I want to begin with a story. Rabbi Shmuel Leib Diskin, the Maharal Diskin, was the Rav of Lomja in Russia. And 11 years into his career being the rabbi in Lomja, he decided that he had enough. The Russian secularization of his community had ravaged it. There was barely anyone who was a Shomer Shabbos anymore. And he decided he needed to leave. He couldn't act as a Rav in the community anymore. He simply couldn't do his job. It was too much for him. So he told his community that he was going to leave and go to the town of Mezrich. Not the Mezrich that you're thinking of from the Baal Shem Tov. That's in Ukraine. This town of Mezrich in Poland is much smaller, and no one ever heard of it before. But he took a position in the town of Mezrich. And the community was very embarrassed. We are the community of Lomja. This is a big Torah community. And our Rav, the great Maharal Diskin, is leaving, and he's going to another town. What a busha, what an embarrassment for us. He's going to the middle of nowhere. How could we do such a thing? So his assistant, Rav Azriel Zelig, went to him and said, you know, Rebbe, what's going on over here? When it comes time for Rosh Yom Kippur, what should we have kavanah for when we say, Al-Chit Shechatan L'Fanacha, B'Zilzul Horim Emorim, that we clearly didn't treat our Rebbe properly, that he's leaving? What did we do to hurt our relationship with you? So the Maharal Diskin said, no, it's not you, it's me. I'm leaving for my own reasons. The town is not what is the problem. Everyone here acted appropriately. I have to leave. And he explained, well, why? Why do I have to leave? And he said, this is the halacha. The halacha demands I leave the town. So the Maharal Diskin explained as follows. Now this tshuva that he wrote explaining what we're about to say is found at the end of the tshuvas of the Maharal Diskin. And they had extra paper on the book. So on the last page, he wrote something else down. So this is what he wrote. And he said as follows, that the Torah tells us, lo sasu evil b'mishpat, right? A person has to be careful in judgment. And then the pasuk finishes in Parshas Kedoshim, b'tzedek tishpot amisach. You have to judge your nation righteously. So this, as Rashi explains, is the mitzvah of being dan l'kaf zuchos, right? If you see someone who's doing something that's questionable, so there's a mitzvah, maybe even a chov, a responsibility, that if you see the person walking into a non-kosher restaurant, you have to use the bathroom, you needed a glass of water, whatever it is, some pikuach nefesh, something of that nature. That's the mitzvah of being dan l'kaf zuchos. This is what the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos writes in the first parak as well. So the Maharal Diskin asks a very important question. He says, what, the Torah wants us to be liars? That's what I am, I'm a liar. I know for sure that my neighbor got into their car on Shabbos and turned on the ignition and brought all of their beach towels and umbrellas and snacks into the car. They were not going to the hospital. They were, you know, nothing. There was no emergency. It was very clear where he was going. He was wearing shorts and flip-flops and ready to go to the beach on Shabbos. So I'm supposed to lie to myself? What about Midvar Sheker Tichak? I have to avoid falsehoods. Shouldn't I, would the Torah wants me to lie and say the person is doing a mitzvah when it's very clear to anyone with two eyes and a brain behind the two eyes that this person is doing an Avera? What kind of a mitzvah is this being Dan Lekavsuchus? What's going on over here? So the Maamar Diskin said we have a very big mistake when we talk about being Dan Lekavsuchus. We think it's for the other person. We think that we're being Dan Lekavsuchus for the merit of my neighbor who's in his flip-flops going to the beach. And he says it's not true. Being Dan Lekavsuchus is for us. It's to help our neshamas and to help our eyes. And he explains as follows. Because what keeps a person from doing an Aveira very often is a sense of embarrassment, of busha, that if I do this, it's going to look not so good if people are going to see what I'm doing. And once you lose a sense of embarrassment, of busha, of shame, so then it, often society falls apart because they have no reason to keep themselves together. Yes?
What about Achech Tuchiyach?
So and when it comes to giving tochacha, you have to be very, very careful about how you give it. You have to know, is the person going to accept it? Is it going to make a kiddush Hashem? Is it going to make a chil Hashem? Your point is 100% correct, but we'll put that on the side. The model just doesn't address that right now, but your question is correct. So he says that if I live in a society and one person's mechal Shabbos, so then that automatically chips away at my barrier, my protection of Shemir Shabbos. If I see one person with my eyes do something wrong, it gives me a sense that maybe this is not so bad. And it creates an image in our minds that this is a possibility that I can act in such a way. And he said the situation in Lumja was so bad that I couldn't be down the Kaf Sechus anymore. In the beginning, when people were Mechal Shabbos or people didn't respect Torah, this person had a bad day, this person had an emergency, he doesn't know any better. But it was so bad at a certain point, said the Maamar Diskin, I can't judge favorably anymore. It's just not physically or emotionally possible to look around and judge favorably. I just don't have the koach, I don't have the neshama, I don't have the brains anymore to be down the kavsuchos. So the Maamar Diskin said, that's why I have to leave. I'm not leaving because of you, I'm leaving because of me. Because I just can't be down the kavsuchos in the town of Lomj anymore. I need to go somewhere else. And the message of the Maamar Diskin is incredibly important because we see from the Maamar Diskin the importance of what we use our eyes for, what we see. That when we see something wrong, when we see something bad, it creates a powerful image in our minds that allows us to think, even for a moment, that such a thing is humanly possible, that such a thing is within the ability of a human being. And if our barriers get weaker, then it opens up the possibility for things that we did not know were capable within our personality. And with this blunt understanding, he left Lamja and went to the town of Mezrich. The Chazon Ish used to say, Rav Nissen Carlos quotes this in his Chut Shani on Hilchot Shabbos, that if you see cars driving on Shabbos, you should try to tell yourself that it's really the same car, right? So we live in a community where a lot of people have Honda Accords and Honda Odysseys. So if you see such a car, you should assume it's really the same one going back and forth, making multiple trips. Because the Chazon Ish wanted us that on Shabbos, we should convince ourselves that there's less Chilul Shabbos than we actually observe. Because we don't want to construct in our minds the possibility of a lot of Chilul Shabbos. Because that will weaken our foundations, our moral foundations of what Shabbos is supposed to be. And this is the impact of what we see with our eyes. And inevitably, we see a number of things throughout the day that don't fit into our personal understanding of what we want for ourselves or our children. And every person, every family has certain standards of what's correct. And the mitzvah being Dan Lekavsuchos is there to protect our standards. That we should convince ourselves that really we're not seeing Averos because we want to make sure we stand on a strong pedestal. And then this comes back to violence. That if your child or someone observes overt violence on television, in movies and a video game, it does not mean that the child is going to become a murderer or have PTSD the next day. That's not what it means. It doesn't mean that you're going to fall apart and, you know, if you see a violent movie or if you see something violent on the news, then that's the end of be all. And that's Sofa Torah and everything's going to fall apart. What it means, though, is that you're putting an image in your mind that you can't get rid of. It's going to be there within the recesses of your mind. It's going to stay there. And therefore, we need to be so careful about what we watch, even if it's not a gruesome movie, even if it's the news. And a newscaster says, viewer discretion is advised. You don't have to watch it. Even though your Yetzer Hara says, I have to know what's going on in the world. I need to see it. You need to be aware that when you watch that piece of news, that footage of something in Syria, some form of horrible violence somewhere else in the world, even here in our own country, when you see that, it's going to enter into your brain and your eyes, and it's not going away. And we need to teach ourselves that we see viewer discretion as advised, that maybe even though we are consenting adults and responsible people, we don't have to see it, because it portrays an image of a world that is not appropriate, that we don't want to live our lives that way. We don't want to desensitize ourselves to violence and the effects that watching violence has on ourselves and our imagination, because the impact can be terrible. We live in a society where we see so much violence in the news and the media that we're not even pained anymore. And we hear such ridiculous numbers of people who, Rahman al-Assad, are killed in buildings or terrorist attacks that we simply flip to the next station, we turn off the radio, and we don't think about it. Because the inculcation of so many horrible things desensitizes to what is normal. And we don't cry anymore over these things. We don't shed a tear. We simply go on and we finish preparing our lunch. And this is what happens when we observe so much violence. And if we were more sensitive to it, and we stayed away from watching these things, and our children stayed away from watching these things, they would grow up to be people who are more sensitive human beings with a greater respect of Tzelem Elokim. People can't control our thoughts when we see grisly images. Whether you're sitting in a meeting and you're bored, whether you're davening, right? We all know that davening, Shemone Esrei, is a great time to think about anything else besides Shemone Esrei, right? Shemone Esrei is the last thing in our minds. So if you have violent images in your mind, you watch something that was violent, so then what do you expect to think about? It's going to be there somewhere in the recess. Something is going to trigger it, and it's going to affect our Torah personalities. There's a very powerful comment to the Vilna Gaon in his Perush on Megillas Esther. He asks, why did Haman need to build the gallows so tall? Right? How tall were the gallows? 50 amos. Right? Hamisham amos. So the Vilna Gaon asks a very important question. If you wanted to hang someone, how tall did the gallows have to be? Just a little bit taller than the person. If the person is 6 feet, so it needs to be 6.5 feet, 7 feet. What did Haman accomplish by making the gallows so tall when he hanged Mordechai? What was the purpose? So the Vilna Gaon says, because he wanted that anywhere you stood in the city of Shushan, you should be able to see Mordechai hanging after he killed him. He wanted a psychological impact on the Jewish people. Not just that people should hear that Mordechai was killed, but they should see it. And the Vilna Gaon then goes on to explain, based on a comment he writes in his parish on the Sikkuna Zohar, that there are four things that seeing something has a greater impact than hearing something. And he explains as follows. Hara'iyah hi gadol min hashmi'a. He says that seeing something is greater than hearing it. And he says in the first way, by seeing something, you can explain something better than describing it, right? I can describe a picture to you, but if you see the picture, you get a better understanding of the image, right? There, in this case, the violence is more graphic and disturbing when you see it versus if you hear about it. Why do you have to go see it? You heard of a terrible event. You have to go now on YouTube and click around the news to go see the violence now. You heard it. That should be enough. The next thing he says, that seeing something creates a memory that lasts much longer than from hearing something. And as we said, it's much more difficult to erase the violent image and the violence from your mind and your eye after you see it, because it's much more ingrained in your personality. The third thing is that seeing something creates a more passionate love or hate for whatever it is. When I see something, my feelings about it are increased that much more than when I hear about it. And the impact of the violence in your psyche is so much more powerful, and it affects your personality in a way that you don't even realize. And finally, says the Vilna Gaon, the impact of seeing something is much quicker than hearing something. You get the image much faster. You get the point without having to think about it. And this is why it's important, because even if you see the graphic violence for a moment, even for a second, a flash, it's there. When you hear something, when you hear somebody describing something that's violent, so you can tell them to stop, I don't want to hear about it. But once you see it, you can't go back. You can't stop it. All it takes is a split second. And Haman was aware of the psychological impact on the Jewish people. Could you imagine to wake up in the morning in Shushan and to see the Gadol Hador hanging from gallows, and then having to be the parent who has to explain to the child what they just saw? That would have destroyed the psyche of the Jewish people. And Haman knew that very well. And that's why he set up the gallows in such a way. The Gemara about the Zaran Daf Yud Ches talks about they shouldn't go to certain, like, Roman stadiums where they would have gladiators fighting and things like that. Because sitting there and watching something has a negative impact. To see such violence and how they would treat human beings 2,000 years ago is something totally not appropriate as well. There are other types of things that we're not supposed to look at as well. The Gemara in Megillah, Daf Ches, talks about it. It's also a stakel pnei ha-rasha. You shouldn't look at the face of a rasha. You shouldn't stare for a long time at the face of someone who's done something very evil, because it affects your personality and it affects you as a human being as well. And then this is not the point of the discussion right now, but this touches on the issue with Shmiras Hanayim when it comes to looking at inappropriate issues and pornography and things like that. A person needs to be careful about looking at those issues and the impact that it has on a human being. And there are shows on television nowadays, shows on Netflix and YouTube and Amazon, shows that the whole purpose of the show is to depict as much horrific violence as they could possibly cram into 45, 50 minutes. That's the whole purpose of the show. And this is what people come and this is what people watch, unfortunately. The Gemara in Makos tells us, in the name of Rabbi Akiva, about a Sanhedrin. That a Sanhedrin that killed twice in 70 years was considered a bloody Sanhedrin. Because in the Jewish personality of being Baishanim, Gomer, Chasadim, of being compassionate people, we should naturally abhor these things. We should want to stay away from them and stay away from these types of things. To the extent that I'm not a fan of my children playing with toy guns and or shooting with their fingers. Because why should that be something that children play with? Why should, even though little children like to play cops and robbers and things like that, why should little boys and girls pretend to use guns? Why should they even have an image that it's an okay thing to use a gun, to go and to hurt someone, even in a playing way? It's such a non-Jewish type of playing, type of fun. To lahavdil, we look at our enemies in the Palestinians, who send their kids to summer camps in which they train how to be terrorists and sit there with little model AK-47s. So why should we, on the other hand, have our children sitting there and playing with guns as well? There's a fantastic tshuva from Rav Yosef in the Yechava Das and Chel Gimel. So he was asked about the permissibility of attending a bullfight in Spain, in Madrid. So he was asked about attending a bullfight. And at the conclusion of the tshuva, he says it's aser. A Jewish person cannot go to a bullfight. Sorry if it ruins anybody's summer plans. But no bullfights. And he says it's aser because it's tzar bale chaim. It's cruel to animals. There's no purpose. You don't get any benefit from going to a bullfight. You're not going to use the meat. You're not going to use the animal in any constructive way, just for your own sick pleasure to go and torture a bull. So Ravadu says it's usher to go to a bullfight. And then he writes as follows. He says, Aval chaliva lalechas l'makolos shemishtasheim b'maseach zarios. God forbid to go to a place in which people take pleasure in cruelty. Al balei chaim, for any human life, for any life. Hagormim hatzbiya ba'adam midara. Because this causes to put the nature of evil in a person's midos, umushchas shalachzarios, and it fills a person with disgustingness of cruelty, umashchas nafsho huyasena, and it makes his neshama disgusting and perverted, v'lo ke'elach elach Yaakov. And this is not where nice Jewish boys and girls should hang out, in places where violence is depicted in a pleasurable way. The Gemara in Yevamos tells us the three personality traits that characterize a Jew is a sense of shame, a sense of compassion, and willingness. Ramaja feels that these midos of going to watch violent things strip away our compassion as human beings as well. There's a very powerful statement I heard from Nassim Bachtvogel, who was the Mashiach in Lakewood. So he quotes the Gemara in the beginning of Sota that says, why is the parsha of Sota, of the woman who is accused of being with somebody else, and then she drinks the water, and then she has this horrible death. And why is it next to the parsha of the nazir, of the person who grows his hair long and doesn't drink wine? So the Gemara says that after the person sees a sota, what happens to her, he'll stay far away from wine. Because if he stays far away from wine, he won't end up in the wrong situation, acting inappropriately. So Nassim Vachol asks an important question. He says, if a person sees how Hashem punishes a sota, forget, why does he need to abstain from wine? The sight of the Midas HaDin, of this strict judgment of Hashem, should be the greatest lesson. He shouldn't need to worry about wine. Even if he has wine, shouldn't the image of the sota and her gruesome death be enough? That should keep him away from the issue itself. Why does he need to have an extra geder of staying away from wine? The image of the sota should be powerful enough that he could drink all the wine in the world and still nothing should happen to him. So Nassim Vachol explains as follows. And he says that when it comes to human nature, the fact is that a person saw this act of violence and it connects it to him. That the person saw an act of the sota being unfaithful, and this he connects to this idea. And he says, until now, a person perhaps knew, conceptually, that there was such a thing, that a person could act in such a way. But once a person has an image in his mind of someone doing such a thing, it becomes part of his personality. And once the person is connected, it has relevance to him, that he didn't have until before, and he has to engage in an extra extent of abstention of staying away to distance himself from it. And similarly, when you hear of a grisly murder on the radio, you might be disgusted by it, but you're also closer to it. And this is the terrible impact, again, that violence connects to us as well. I just want to tell you something I saw in the news the other day about Facebook, that people who are very sick put up on Facebook all types of terrible videos and horrific things. So how does Facebook clear it out? How do they make sure that you don't come across all these terrible things when you're looking at Facebook? So they pay about 3,000 people to sit by computers and to watch all of these things and delete them. This is the person's job, to sit there from 9 to 5 in the morning and to watch the most horrific things ever done by human beings that were videoed and put online. And this is the person's job, right? So the article said, imagine putting up with your commute, heading to work, sitting in a cubicle and watching murder and abuse and drug use and terrible things all day. This is the person's job, every single day at Facebook. So they write that CEO Mark Zuckerberg had pledged to hire 3,000 more people to monitor the site for disturbing content, in addition to the 4,500 people already there. So close to 8,000 people are sitting there all day, ruining their image of what is appropriate. And this is their job, to watch all this. So he says that it's well documented that these jobs are, psychologically speaking, among the worst in tech, writes the author in this article, and unbeknown to many users, armies of contract workers are responsible for keeping all manner of terrible images off the webs, those popular sites, and they typically work for long hours for low pay. Many of those workers have described suffering serious psychological damage from the images that they've seen, and yet, when asked why they accept the job, so most moderators utter some variation of, well, someone has to do it, and therefore this is the person's job. Imagine what a person's life is like, to see all this every single day. 12 hours a day. What type of a human being they are? How can they talk to their loved ones, to their children? How can they have a normal relationship after all these terrible things are implanted on their psyche? And this is just our discussion amplified to an even greater degree of how damaging violence can be for ourselves and other people as well. And how much more for the Jewish neshama, right? How careful do we have to be when it comes to the movies and television that we watch, that our children watch, and even when it comes to things that are, again, not movies or television, but even when it comes to the news and when it comes to photojournalism. There's a museum in Washington that's all dedicated to the news. It's called The Newseum. It's a great museum. But there's a whole section in the museum which highlights great photojournalism. But you know what? Great photojournalism also has to take pictures of very horrible things that go on in the world. And you walk into this hall, this room, and it's just tons and tons of pictures of horrifying things. And it has an effect on you. It's not considered inappropriate, and it's not considered wrong. It's part of showing what's going on in the world. But you have to see it, and you go and see it, and you click on the image to see what's going on, it's going to have an impact on you and other people around us. So, how much time do we have? Time to start? No?
It's 1 now. We started at 12:30.
5 minutes. Okay. So, in the last 5 minutes, I just want to talk about, so what are we supposed to do then? So a person wants to become more sensitive to what they see and wants to remove the impact of watching violent or gruesome things. So what are we supposed to do? So I want to bring two different ideas. We know that there's a mitzvah of ir hanidachas, We know that if a city dedicates itself to Avodah Zarah, so the Torah says that the basin has to go and warn them multiple times, they're given multiple chances to do tshuva, and this community says, forget basin, forget the Jewish people, we don't care about you, we're going to worship Avodah Zarah. And after warnings and warnings and warnings and pleading and pleading and pleading, so at that point, the Jewish army comes and they go and they wipe out the city in no uncertain terms to make sure that the Avodah Zarah is removed from Eretz Yisrael. And it's violent. It is the Ratzon Hashem, and what Hashem wants to be done, but it is something that is not pleasing to do. This is the mitzvah of Yer Nidachas. And at the very end of the parsha of Yer Nidachas, the Torah says, "V'nasata lecha rachamim v'rachamecha," and Hashem will bring mercy upon you. So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh asks, that seems to be very odd. These people are doing something that's the total opposite of merciful, right? The Jewish army is going in and wiping out a whole city in a very violent and very physical way. So where's the rachamim over here? So the Or HaChaim HaKadosh says that it's a bracha from Hashem. And he says the Torah is very conscious of the fact that the commandment to wipe out the whole city, whose majority of certain Avodah Zarah, would tend to coarsen a Jew's natural instincts of being compassionate and loving. How could a person be a loving father and a loving husband or a loving person to the world after doing such a thing? What's going to happen to his personality? So Hashem says, I give these people a special bracha. That even though it's against your nature now to be compassionate after doing such violence, because you're doing the Ratzon Hashem, Hashem is going to give you a special bracha that you'll have rachamim and compassion. And then he goes on to say that we've been told by Arabs that when they are on killing spree, all their normal feelings of compassion are totally suppressed and they become cruel. And therefore the Torah says, that's not what we want. You have to act l'man Hashem. And there are times when there needs to be an army and we need to protect the Jewish people. You have to go do what you have to do. We still, at the end of the day, need to contain your tzel melokim, being a Torah personality. And therefore, says Hashem, will give you a special bracha. V'nasata lecha rachamim. I'll give you rachamim for doing such a thing. And then, the Or HaChaim goes on to explain the importance here of being a kind of Ratzon Hashem. But what I want to say here from the Or HaChaim HaKadosh is that you need siyata d'shmaya. You need to daven, right? To clarify our midos and to make sure we remain compassionate people who cry when we're supposed to cry, and have emotions when we're supposed to have emotions, and be caring when someone is painful, we need siyata d'shmaya. We live in a world where we're so desensitized to so many things around us that we lose a lot of compassion, and we don't cry when we hear terrible things, and we don't feel pain when we hear of horrific things. We need siyata d'shmaya. We need to daven to Hashem that we should have v'nasata lecha rachamim v'rachamecha. We shall have Hashem's rachamim and make us more compassionate people. The second thing is something that's more in our camp, and that's based on a very powerful comment of Mordechai Ilan in his Mikdash Mordechai in Parshas Noach. The pasuk says, "V'taloi lav hayonale isa'era v'hinei Allah zayis taraf b'fia." That when the dove came back to Noach at the end of the day, he had, as we all know, an olive branch in his mouth. And what's the language that the Torah uses to describe the olive branch? The Torah says, "Zayis taraf." A torn branch. And that is a very striking language, says Rav Mordechai Ilan. And he says, what's going on over here? How can it be that they use such harsh language? Taraf means to be torn. Like Yosef, when they bring his coat to Yaakov, the Torah says, Taraf, Taraf, he was torn asunder. He was torn to pieces. Taraf means to break something in a violent way. Why are we describing the branch that way? He cut the branch, he was coats of the branch, piece of the branch, why such violent language when it comes to describing the olive branch that Noach sees now from the mouth of the dove? So the Mikdash Mordechai explains as follows. Imagine what Noach just underwent, what Noach just saw. Noach was just party to the most destructive event in the history of mankind. He saw with his own eyes all of mankind wiped out. Sometimes when we think about Noach and the flood, we have this image from kindergarten that Noah got onto the boat with his family, and it was like a cruise, and everyone on their way, and there was animals, and the lion hit Noah, and a year later they came off, and it was a whole brand new world. But just imagine for a second what was going outside, and what that did psychologically to Noah. Noah was in a little ark while it was pounding rain, while you heard the screams of thousands of people being drowned outside the Teva. This is what Noah observed. Can you imagine what it did to him as a human being? We saw what Noach did at the end afterwards. He got drunk in his vineyard, and his life after that, nothing great had happened afterward because he was so psychologically damaged by the events that he saw and the violence. And therefore, says the Mikdash Mordechai, that's why when Noah saw for the first time an olive branch that was removed from his source of life, he went to the other extreme of sensitivity. We see an olive branch torn, whatever, if it came off the tree, sorry, right? You see, you want a branch, you want a leaf, you're bored out in the field, so you pulled off a leaf and you start ripping it, or you pull off a dandelion and you start blowing it away. Very cute. Noah was so sensitive now, because he had to go to the other extreme of observing violence, that even a torn olive branch was taraf. It was torn. It was violently torn from its source of life, and he couldn't bear the thought that another thing died. It totally drove him mad. He needed to go to the other extreme of sensitivity. And therefore, that's our job as well. When we observe violence and we see violent things, we need to train ourselves and our children to go to the other extreme, to be more sensitive, to be more concerned, to be overly sensitive to these things, so we don't become desensitized in the other direction when it comes to violent things. We need to be careful to use caution about the violence and gruesome imagery that our children see in magazines and the internet, and to teach ourselves and our children, you cannot unsee something. You can't unsee it. You need to be careful that when you click on the image, you watch the video, and you watch the news report, whatever it is, and you go to watch this movie or this TV show, you can't unsee it. It's not going to go away. It's going to be there forever. And you need to stress this point. And that comes with a sense of maturity and responsibility. That as people become older, they need to be self-aware of their own decisions. No one's telling me anymore what I can or cannot watch. So I need to be self-aware of my own. If I see this, how is it going to impact me tonight, tomorrow, in the future, as a human being? Hashem should bench us all. Have a wonderful day.